Hey folks, you love us, and I hope you love Amazon. I'm a customer. Well, here's a great way to shop at Amazon while supporting Wolfpot. Instead of going directly to Amazon, go to wolfpot.com/Amazon. That'll take you to the same Amazon you know and love, and all the prices will be the same as they always are, but we'll get a sweet, sweet kickback, and that helps everybody. You, me, Baron, everybody here. Give it a try. wolfpot.com/Amazon, and we thank you. Greetings, everyone. This is Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies. And I am here today with my daughter again, Jessie. She insisted on coming back. I couldn't stop her.
Nepotism is a beautiful thing.
Well, a great man once said, nepotism begins at home. And I believe in that. Baron Vaughn is shooting his TV series today, and Jessie has graciously agreed to step in. And here you are.
And here I am.
And she also came up with an idea for this episode, so I want to give credit where credit is due.
I thank you kindly.
Tell us your concept and how it turned out.
My concept. Well, obviously, and as we've mentioned before, we're pretty much always talking about movies at home. People ask me on a pretty regular basis, what do you guys talk about? It's like, no, it's exactly what you think. We're just a bunch of movie nerds just talking about the same thing.
And in fact, on last week's episode, Baron and I talked about the movie Hollywoodland, which is all about the actor George Reeves, who played Superman on TV in the 1950s, who memorably played Superman on TV in the 1950s. And he was Superman to my generation and for years to follow.
So in part, this idea came around because so many of my friends are nuts for Marvel and DC. They love every single movie that comes out. They'll see whatever comes out. Obviously, the Marvel Universe and that insane calendar where it's going, you know, in 2057, it'll be a movie of such and such. And in 2975, it's crazy to think that they've got it all planned out. And then there's also, of course, there's TV shows as well as Daredevil, which is a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking
about the various animated series.
All kinds at this point. And so it sort of got me thinking, though, because I thought it was interesting. I was talking to my boyfriend, who is very much obsessed with this world. And we were talking about who – I was saying to him that my superheroes – all tend to be quite old. And I don't mean that in the sense of their age, because most of them have passed away, but in the sense that I grew up with Buster Crabbe
as
Flash Gordon and George Reeves and, you know, all of these people, because I watched the serials my dad showed me and things like that. So when I picture certain people, really, I immediately picture probably either the first incarnation or one of the earliest incarnations. And at the same time, though, I completely understand that for other people, it's different. Because really what it comes down to is who did you see first? Who is sort of I say to people, when you close your eyes, who do you see? So if I say to you, Spider-Man, who do you see? Superman, Batman, all these various actors and portrayals. And we also even, my dad and I were even talking about Bond, because while James Bond is not necessarily a superhero, he kind
of
is.
He's kind of a superhero.
Oh, look at that. Look at what you did with it. I was going to say badass, but you made it sound fancy.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, but there too, if you want to hear a fight, start arguing over Bond. You want to say, well, no, I mean, I personally feel that Roger Moore was the... No, there's only one. Actually, I asked my mom last night, I said, who do you think Bond is? She goes, I don't have to think, there's only one, Sean Connery. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fascinating subject to me, because as much as people are talking about all of the new things that are coming around, it is pretty interesting to think about what we all have in our minds as the real superhero, the real person who portrays it for you.
And it's a very, as you say, it's a very personal matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it has mostly to do, I think, with age, mostly. If you grew up, if you were an adolescent in the late 70s into the 80s, then Christopher Reeve is your Superman. It just stands to reason. He's the only one who was playing Superman at that time. If you're a TV fan who grew up in the 90s, you might think Dean Cain is your Superman from
Dean Cain was on Lois and Clark with Terry Hatcher. Mm-hmm. I watched that show. I watched it religiously. I enjoyed it. And it's interesting to me, actually, because, and again, this is something else that I've spoken to several of my friends about, Superman visually has really changed the least in terms of jet black hair, meant to look strong, and even his suit. Even the Superman suit. I looked from George Reeves to Christopher Reeves to sorry, I had an S. I apologize, Christopher Reeve. Please forgive me. And then Tom Welling, who was the lead in Smallville, which was an extremely popular show. Dean Cain from Lois and Clark. And so all of them look the same. And even, as I say, the suit he wears is the same. Henry Cavill's is the first that has sort of a weird kind of a...
They wanted to give a texture.
It's an odd texture. But
you skipped over Brandon Routh.
I didn't skip anything.
Never mind.
There are many others within that, but I just mean it's interesting to look at a character in 1952, and then look at a character in 2015 and see that they essentially look the same.
Mm-hmm.
One of the only ones that had that happen, because look at our Batmans. There's a wide array of Batmans of how they looked when they were Bruce Wayne, and how interesting. That is that you would find someone to be a certain, you know, so it's almost like other heroes could be imagined in different ways, but Superman is Superman.
Well, yes. I mean, and the design in the comic book has changed over the decades too, in mostly subtle ways, but some people might say not so subtle ways. They've redrawn him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he no longer works for the Daily Planet. Don't tell me that. I don't want to know it.
Mm.
He's a reporter. Mild-mannered reporter for the Great Metropolitan Newspaper. That's all I want to know.
I'm going to interject real quick because if you could see how angry he is right now, I just want to bring up one thing, Betty and Veronica.
Yeah. Don't start.
If you want to see, if you want to make Maltin angry,
don't get me started.
Speaking of Hulk, if you want to see Maltin angry, bring up Betty and Veronica and watch him just go, ah! It's not good.
No.
It's not good.
Well, no, I'm a traditionalist, as
yes,
you know.
Yes, you are.
But I've accepted the different actors over the years. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have the same level of affection for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I've accepted them in the context of the movies. And that's all you need to do, really.
Yeah.
That's all you really need to do.
But that's it.
But just in the same vein, I mean, really, if you say Obi-Wan Kenobi to me, I'm thinking Alec Guinness.
Absolutely.
I'm not thinking Ewan McGregor, and I like Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And he did a good job in those films.
Yes, he did.
And I think he was a good match, actually, for Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they costumed and the way he carried himself. And I know that he studied Guinness. He looked at the original Star Wars films.
Because he's a talented and smart guy.
Yes. But if you say Obi-Wan, I'm thinking Alec Guinness. That's
Absolutely.
All there is to it. Now, it's totally subjective,
mm-hmm.
totally, utterly subjective.
But as you say, a lot of it is emotional in that sense too, because if you fell in love with someone, so there, Sean Connery is my Bond. Again, we're not necessarily talking about who was best. It's not about, oh, well, I think so-and-so portrayed this character the best. It's about just who you, as I say, when you shut your eyes, who do you picture?
Right. And I think some of this has to do with childhood.
But that's what we're saying is
yes.
It's exactly that. The first Bond I saw was Sean Connery.
Right, because one of your teachers used to use up class time by screening the James Bond movies for
on
you
the
when
wall.
He should have been teaching.
Okay, no. First of all, excuse me, sir. No, when we'd finish, when the big concert of the year would end,
this is the choir director.
We'd have 2 weeks left. And so sometimes we'd sing, but for the most part, he would project movies onto the wall. And that's actually how we saw all of the Bond movies with Sean Connery.
Right. As opposed to me, I was, I believe, 12 years old. I missed Dr. No, but I saw the second one, From Russia with Love. I think I was 12. And it was absolutely the coolest, the most adult movie I'd ever seen. The sexiest, the most violent.
Please don't say sexy in front of me.
I'm sorry. Deal with it. But
it
really was. It was, people don't realize today, because the James Bond movies, while they're still popular, aren't so very different. They're no longer cutting edge in the way they were in the early to mid-60s.
Well, in a time now when a sex scene is almost standard and nudity of some kind is almost standard.
Right, and violence and
yeah.
Fights, hand-to-hand combat, whatever it may be. But From Russia With Love had so many ingenious ideas and gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
Rosa Klebb and her shoe, you know, with the dagger in it. All of that stuff. That big fight scene with Robert Shaw in the train compartment. I'd never seen, and none of us had ever seen anything like it. It wasn't just me. It was really revolutionary. And part of that has to do with the fact that it was British.
Yes.
It was a British film.
Yes.
And those early films were very British.
Yeah.
And then when they caught on so much here in the States, and it was far from a sure thing that James Bond would succeed. But when it did and it hit big, then they started thinking more American, I think.
Yeah.
And it started to change. And that's right around the same time that Sean Connery got bored with the role and moved on. But
and we were talking about Bond last night. My dad and I were talking about Bond last night a little bit because I was saying that it's what is interesting to me, again, talking about sort of having different actors who look so different. I think that we, again, in picturing Bond, what do you see? I see a man in a very sharp tux, black and white, you know, the classic tux, fitted, perfect.
What I think the Brits would call a dinner jacket, actually.
Let's knock it into the... so, you know, he's in his tux. He looks so sharp with his bow tie, and it's that, and it goes into the silhouette of him with the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't necessarily have a face to that image.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that image. So the person who fills that suit, the person who puts on that outfit, has to look like they can carry that outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how interesting it is because Daniel Craig, as we know, he's not a classically handsome actor. He's obvious, I think he's handsome, but in the way that we think of Bond, it's very different. But at the same time, Daniel Craig is so suave,
mm-hmm,
and debonair.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that way about him because what do you have to believe with someone like James Bond? You have to believe that he could get into anywhere, anything. He can walk into a building and somehow just through his charm and confidence magically get to wherever he has to go. And same with women. You have to believe that women will trip over themselves trying to get to him. And so you have to carry yourself a certain way. So it's not necessarily the face or the build. It's how you carry yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daniel Craig has certainly pulled it off.
Yes.
But it doesn't hurt that the movies he's been in have been so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, except for that one in the middle.
Let's not talk about it.
But the first one, Casino Royale, was terrific.
Yeah.
And the last one I thought was really, really good. And
we
I
hope saw Spectre, that together. Yeah.
I hope Spectre lives up to that.
Yeah.
Even though we'll have a new M this time around.
Yes.
Replacing Judi Dench. But I think they've got their finger on the pulse of what makes those movies work and for a contemporary audience.
And yet what was interesting, so we told Baron about what we would be talking about today. Again, he's filming, but he sent an email and he said he loves the superhero idea. And he said, just like the superheroes, the people who play them reflect the time they're in. In a different era, someone else will play Iron Man, but we have a standard with Robert Downey Jr. George Reeves was the standard for so many until Christopher came along. For some, they had a new understanding of the character, and the picking of the actor is very much about Donner's vision and the film industry at that moment. Just like Henry Cavill, which Baron says, a haircut with eyes, reflect Hollywood's priorities of today. And he gets into, just for a moment at the end, he says, someone who reflects past Bonds, I remember hearing that Fassbender would bring a Connery-like air back to the role. Yes. And now there's redhead rumors and all that controversy about Idris Elba. And it is really interesting because I can completely picture Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
I can completely picture him being Bond. He, to me, immediately. And it's, you know, it's just interesting because they have to have that effect on you. I would follow Idris Elba wherever the hell he told me to go. I just would, blindly, right behind him.
Okay.
Thanks.
I hope you have that opportunity sometime.
And no pressure, no stalking. I love you.
But I think that even though you saw the Bond films long after they were made, you saw them when you were young.
Yep.
those original Sean Connery Bond films. Yep. I think that's what matters.
Yep.
And I think that's how most of us form our impressions.
Yeah.
And which is why I still have such fondness for George Reeves after all these years. And I have no trouble, you know, with anybody else in that role, but yeah. they will never replace in my heart.
The image of him yeah. and then the flag comes through
sure.
waving behind him. That's Superman for me.
Yeah.
And part of it too, it is always interesting, of course, to see how things age. Mm-hmm. And naturally, some things will seem cheesy, some things will seem ridiculous, and some things won't hold up. But he has such a way about him.
Yeah.
And so even though sometimes the dialogue or the storyline or the fights, obviously now, you know, we have all these choreographers. There's so much that goes into
it. I want to say, just for the record, that one part of the appeal of the Superman TV show was similar to the appeal of those Saturday matinee serials that we talk about sometimes.
Yep.
Is that even as a kid, I felt superior to them. And so did my friends.
yeah.
We knew they were cheesy then.
Yep.
And that
but
was,
it's okay.
But that was okay, exactly. Yeah. And It's an interesting turn of events, call it a coincidence if you like, that Ben Affleck, who portrayed George Reeves in Hollywoodland, is now playing a superhero in the next movie. He's playing Batman, though, not Superman.
And people are losing their minds over next movie.
Which brings to mind the saga of Michael Keaton.
Yep.
For those who don't remember who weren't around, this was before the internet, mind you. This long precedes the internet. When Michael Keaton, a primarily comedic actor, was cast by Tim Burton in the Batman movie, which came out in 1989, there was such a protest, such a hue and cry, that people were going crazy. How dare you? You know, it was an insult to the image of Batman, blah, 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 blah. And I finally got to ask Michael Keaton about this when I interviewed him earlier this year at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And he remembered, at the time, they were shooting in London, but he was commuting back and forth to be with his kid on the Concorde. And he remembers picking up the Wall Street Journal and seeing one of those line drawings the Wall Street Journal does
mm-hmm.
instead of photographs. He saw his face as a line drawing because they had printed an article in the Wall Street Journal about the controversy about his casting. Mm-hmm. And this is while he's making the movie.
Oh,
not exactly a confidence builder.
No.
And he said how tough it was knowing that people were sort of gunning for him while he's making the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
But there, too, so interesting because, and I mentioned this, you know, movies now, there are certain actors / writers who love certain genres, be it music or TV or actors, whatever it is. Adam Sandler always uses 80s music. He loves 80s music. Well, when I started to think about this, one of the films that came to my mind was the movie Neighbors with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron. And there's a scene where Seth Rogen says to Zac Efron, "Who's Batman to you?" And Zac Efron says, "It's Christian Bale." And Seth Rogen says, "Oh, see, for me, it's Michael Keaton." And then they do dueling impressions of their Batmans. And I just thought how interesting because there are a lot of people who are not going to know Michael Keaton was Batman.
Right.
Many people...
Or forget that Val Kilmer played him.
Oh, see, and that's
George
the...
George Clooney played
that's
him.
That's the thing. My two Batmans, just from memory, are George Clooney and Val Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they were the best, but because that's what I saw. Mm-hmm. In the same way that I do picture O'Donnell as
Robin,
you mm-hmm. know, he's what I see as Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I remember about those movies that still cracks me up to this day is the nipple controversy, adding the nipples to the suits, including because Alicia Silverstone played Batgirl and she had nipples. Oh, dear God. No, not on the suit. So there was that reference in Neighbors. So here we are, a movie that came out recently. And they're talking about it. And then there's the movie Ted, which has running through it, you know, this whole thing about Sam Jones.
Playing Flash Gordon.
Playing yeah. Flash Gordon. And then Sam Jones is in the film as himself, playing himself, and even has a scene where while he's high on various drugs, there's an Asian gentleman who comes in and says, accidentally says the word Ming, and suddenly Sam Jones goes, "Death to Ming!" And again, I'm thinking, do any of you people watching this movie have any idea who Ming the Merciless is? Now in our household, Ming the Merciless, right up there.
Oh, yes.
We love us some Ming the Merciless. But again, not the 1980s. Or even just people knowing the Queen song from the movie. I'd only heard that. I didn't actually hear that until probably about the time Ted came out. I'd never heard it because that was just not, that's not what I watched.
And there you have it.
But it's so interesting. Again, just you bring up people. I'm sure for the teens into the early 20s, the folks who saw Ted, they don't know what that movie is. They don't know Flash Gordon. So it's kind of wild.
Well, I kind of admire people like Seth MacFarlane and the guys who do The Simpsons for throwing in references.
They do it anyway.
Yeah, they do it anyway.
Yep.
They do it because it makes them laugh.
Yep.
And their range of references is so wide, so incredibly broad.
Yeah, well, and Seth MacFarlane loves musicals, so for me, he wins.
Yeah, well, we're gonna talk about someone else who's referenced by Seth MacFarlane in a very amusing way.
Yes, not referenced.
No, he's actually been rehired, actually.
Adam West. The mayor of Quahog.
We'll be back to talk about that and other heroes and superheroes in just a minute. Friends, I'm excited to introduce you to Howl FM, the best, most convenient way to listen to all the episodes of Malton on Movies. It's on the web at Howl FM and on the go with the Howl app. You can stream and download all Malton on Movies episodes that have been released in the past 6 months. Go beyond the audio with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and more. You can even go further by upgrading to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. Get exclusive access to the entire Malton on Movies archive and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than 6 months. They've all been remastered and have no advertising. Only with Howl Premium, listen to hundreds of hours of Mark Maron's WTF archives. You can hear classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., many, many more. And Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals. Those are brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You can check out the great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. There are already 10 brand new hilarious Howl Originals. We're adding new shows every week. Get access to all this exclusive content both on your phone and on your desktop with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of a free trial. Try it out. Go to Howl FM and enter code MALTIN at checkout. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on Howl FM, the website. So go to Howl FM, that's HOWL.FM, and use the promo code MALTIN, M-A-L-T-I-N, for one free month trial of Howl Premium. Give it a try. Welcome back to Malton on Movies. I'm Leonard Malton.
And I am not Leonard Malton.
Well, who are you?
Jesse Malton.
Well, hello.
It's like a Leonard Malton, but different. That's my slogan, actually, on my, it's not on my shirt. I wish it was.
But. Now, let's talk about the great Adam West.
The great Adam West. Well, so when I brought this idea up to my dad, this whole superhero idea, I said, because we really like audience participation from you guys. We really do. And it's a lot of fun to read what you have to say. So I posted on my Facebook, my dad, you know, with his, and then on Twitter as well, asking you guys, who's your Superman, who's your Batman, who's your Spider-Man, and I got answers, all kinds, all of the kinds of answers. And it was really, really neat, actually, to read and see what people were attached to. And one of them, of course, that came up a lot was Adam West.
My Batman, and, my original Batman.
And for many people, that was the answer. Adam West is their Batman. But it's so interesting, again, because of the timing of it, there are people who did not see that Batman show, haven't seen the reruns of it, and yet they know him because he is a character on Family Guy, and he plays Adam West. He's Mayor Adam West of Quahog. His voice is just, it's hysterical, and that's part of it. And he obviously gets the joke because he lets them do whatever they want. You know, he's often being made fun of on the show, and he's into it. He doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. And good for him. And I think he's the subject of a new documentary, I believe.
Yeah, there
which
is.
Which I haven't yet seen.
Yes, yes.
Speaking of documentaries, this is what we'll call a sidebar. My daughter would call it a tangent, but I'm trying to put a positive spin on it, so I'm going to call it a sidebar.
I'm going to leave the room real quick.
No. There's also a new documentary, which I haven't yet seen, but I want to, about the Superman movie that almost was. The one that was written by Kevin Smith. The one that was going to star Nicolas Cage. The one that was in the works for many, many years at Warner Brothers, passed through a number of hands, and that was going to explore Superman as the ultimate outsider.
Mm.
It was a different take on Superman because Superman, remember, was created by two Jewish kids from Cleveland, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. I think they were both from Cleveland. Yes, I think they were boyhood friends, if I got that right. And I got to interview Nicolas Cage around this time, very, very briefly. It was a quick interview for Entertainment Tonight. But when the camera was off, I said, hey, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do with Superman. He said, me too. I said, no one's ever approached it this way. He said, that's why I'm really excited about this. And he wanted to play that outsider Superman.
And Nicolas Cage is a Superman buff.
Of course.
And his child's name is Kal-El. legally. Is Kal-El. Yeah. I mean, that's...
That says a lot.
That's commitment.
That's commitment, indeed. Anyway, it's a shame the film didn't get made, but there is now a film about the film that didn't get made. And look for it. Search online. You'll find information about it, I'm sure. I don't know that it's streaming yet because it's already or just about to play in theaters here in L.A. And I'm curious, very, very curious about that.
Always interesting.
Yep.
The stories behind filmmaking can genuinely, a lot of time, even be more interesting than the film.
Now, let's talk about a character that flopped the first few times they tried him. The Hulk.
And
now, he didn't flop on TV. That's where he had his first mainstream pop success, when Lou Ferrigno played the Hulk and Bill Bixby played Bruce Banner.
And that, so the number of the poll that I did take, most people said that Hulk to them is Lou Ferrigno / Bill Bixby.
Mm-hmm.
And it ranged in age with that answer. It wasn't just folks of a certain generation. In general, that's what they saw. And that's referenced in I Love You, Man.
Mm-hmm.
Lou Ferrigno is in I Love You, Man.
Right.
And so for people who don't know or didn't know who he was, suddenly there he is with this prominent role in a movie that people really enjoyed and a lot of people saw and continued to watch when it comes on because it's a funny movie. But there he is again.
But then came a big-time, big-screen movie in 2003, directed by Ang Lee, no mm-hmm. less, with Eric Bana, very talented Aussie actor.
So talented. And visually, to me, very Hulk-like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a big fella. He's mm-hmm. a big, strong fella.
Mm-hmm. And but it was not a success.
Mm-mm.
To put it mildly. And then 5 years later, they tried it again. And that's a short time to do a complete reboot. But they felt they could try again. And they did it with Edward Norton. Very unusual, offbeat casting. And it's a better movie than the Eric Bana one. But again, there was widely disparate opinions about that film.
And in large part, too, you're talking about Michael Keaton, them people having a bad reaction to that. They had a terrible reaction to Edward Norton
mm-hmm.
because, again, physically, whereas I just said, you know, when you think of Bana, that's a big guy. It's a big, strong, tough guy. When you think of Edward Norton, he's slight physically.
I thought it worked, though.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it didn't work, yeah. but prior to the film coming out, as you're talking about Michael Keaton seeing these things, before the film was even out, people said, how could Edward Norton play the Hulk? How is that possible? And a lot of people did, of course, mention...
The answer, of course, was he's such a good actor.
Exactly. But what's interesting is what a lot of people said with Mark Ruffalo is that because of the CGI, because of the technology we have now, because of the expressions that can be made, a lot of people wrote in saying that that's who they really felt was one of the best Hulks because it was the most expressive Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
It was one where you actually could see emotion as opposed to just Hulk smash. It's a human being.
So for today's generation, Mark Ruffalo may be, for all time, their Hulk.
Yeah,
well, their Bruce Banner.
These Avengers movies have been so popular.
Yes.
Globally mm-hmm. popular. These are your folks. These actors, and we've discussed a bit, but so Robert Downey Jr.
Now Iron Man is a great example. This is really interesting because he's the only person to have played that character. And that character was not a major Marvel character, as they have with other properties like Guardians of the Galaxy. They've plucked some of these things from their more obscure shelf in the Marvel vault and turned them into successes. So in this case, Iron Man came to life on screen, and I remember, too, leading up to its opening, people saying, Robert Downey Jr. as a superhero?
Mm-hmm.
Does that really make sense? Because his career, while it was on an upward swing, and he was great in Zodiac, which helped reestablish him after some of his personal problems, back in action. Everyone happy to see him back in action. But still, really a superhero? And then, of course, we got to see him in Iron Man. We saw what an individual, personal performance it was. And the Tony Stark was a very interesting, sardonically amusing character, not just a superhero. And that's what made it work. That's definitely what made it work, and why he is, of course, you know, completely identified as that character right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's indicated that he knows his time is limited, that there's a short shelf life to playing a superhero, and he's in his early 50s now.
Yeah. Well,
he looks great.
To playing any character that needs to be able to jump and run and,
sure.
and do 7,000 things, yeah.
Sure, so he's very, very well aware of that. And I think he's indicated even that he's about ready to hang up his hat.
Yeah.
As Tony Stark. So they're going to have to introduce someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Not an easy task. But not an impossible task either.
Which is what brought you and several of the folks who wrote in to bring up X-Men.
X-Men did it right. As opposed to Spider-Man. We'll get to him in a minute.
Nah.
But X-Men, I think the people behind the X-Men series, I don't like the word franchise, but the X-Men series, because franchise to me means Arby's,
yes.
or Kentucky Fried Chicken. But the X-Men series, they got it right. They said, all right, how do we extend the life of this property? What can we do to extend the life? Well, others had thought of the idea of prequels before, so that wasn't new. But they said, yeah, but how do we do it in a way that won't turn off the fan base we built up with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen? How do we do that? Well, they did a transitional film. I think that was the key. They did a transitional film called X-Men First Class, which included Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
And then had a great cast of
yes.
new people.
And
a first-rate
yes.
class of new folks.
Yes, so the idea that we would have to get used to new people was massaged both by having the familiar
like
people there and by casting two of the most talented younger actors on the planet,
mm-hmm.
James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender. I mean, if you're going to have to accept anybody, it'll be them.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have Jennifer Lawrence, who's mm-hmm. bringing all, so many good people. Nicholas Holt, just mm-hmm. lots of really, really talented folks. And I love that. I love that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were smart to do it that way because it meant that you weren't detracting from the others.
Right. And they had a precedent, too, in the Star Trek movies,
yep.
where there was a transitional film that included both William Shatner and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
So, okay, you know, history is a good teacher. History is always a good teacher. And that may have been, I don't know if that crossed their minds or not. It may have, it may not. But it worked for Star Trek, and it worked for X-Men. Now, where I don't think it's worked is in rebooting Spider-Man so soon.
It's so odd to me. It's so odd to me.
To virtually remake the first Spider-Man movie from 2002 that starred Tobey Maguire with a new cast, not only a new Spider-Man, but a new Aunt May and a new Uncle Joe,
mm-hmm.
when, in fact, Rosemary Harris, who played, I mean, Cliff Robertson was very good as Uncle Joe in the first one, and And Rosemary Harris is one of the finest actresses in the theater or on film, mm-hmm. as Aunt May. Just perfect. You know, well, I mean, I like Sally Field very much. I'm a fan, longtime fan of Sally
What's
Field.
Not, she's incredible.
What's not to like?
She's incredible.
But, and Martin Sheen, too. Same thing. So they hired terrific actors. But all it did was make me think about the other actors.
Yep.
It invites comparison because yep. It's too recent. I don't understand. And yet, Amazing Spider-Man came out and made a bundle of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I must be wrong.
Well, but here's, again, another interesting fact with everybody writing in. People either said, there is no Spider-Man. that was the answer, was I don't have one or I don't believe in one. Or they said Tobey Maguire. Not one of the 100-something responses, not a single one said Andrew Garfield. None.
Interesting.
And
he's good, by
and
the way.
He's good, and he's a very good actor, mm-hmm. and we've seen him do a lot of different things, but that just didn't happen. And it was too fast, and the idea that they're looking at more, you kind of go, guys, give it a minute. Give us a break before you do that.
I know. It's very strange.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Now, you know that there's got to be somewhere in our future, somebody, I mean, I'm about to utter something that some people will consider heretical, but I don't know, 5 years from now, 8 years from now, 10 years from now, somebody's going to say, isn't it time to remake Harry Potter?
They're already adding on to it now.
But, I mean, actually remake.
Oh, yeah. No, people have already talked about and it's just, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Now, you've already said, people want to get me angry can just push my certain buttons, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and it'll happen. But what happens when I say to you they're doing some sort of sequel to Mary Poppins?
Oh, well, you know exactly what happened because I burned our house down. No, I didn't actually burn the house down. What I did was I set fire to every house I passed for about 3.5 hours. No, the idea of I am not the type of person who says things must stay as they are and you can't look into other things. Obviously, Saving Mr. Banks was very interesting and a mm-hmm. lot of people liked that film. And we are incredibly fortunate because Richard Sherman, one of the Sherman brothers who wrote the music, is a very, very, very dear family friend. And of the people that I've gotten to know in my life, he is without question not only one of the kindest and most talented human beings, but just he's magic. He embodies magic. So it was really interesting to see Saving Mr. Banks. But then you tell me you're going to remake Mary Poppins. And I say, if you do that, I don't know. I don't want to make any threats on the air, because then they'll track me down. But suffice it to say, if anything accidentally happens on that set, it was me. Because no, leave it alone. I know it's cheesy. I know that there are certain
cheesy.
Things that are cheesy. Well, Bert's accent. Van Dyke's accent is horrific. But that's okay.
In for a penny, in for a pound. If you love the movie, you'll love the movie.
Excuse me, in for a tuppence.
Yes, thank you.
In for a tuppence.
Yeah.
Remaking that movie is about the worst. Yeah, speaking of tangents... I'm going to walk away now.
All right. Now, they say it's going to be a sequel. It's going to be set 20 years later.
I don't care. Don't touch Mary Poppins. It's perfect.
Yes. Well, I couldn't agree more. We'll have a little more to discuss when we come back in just a moment.
Hey, everybody. This is Baron Vaughn from Malt Known Movies with Baron Vaughn. Some of you might know that in addition to being a huge fan of movies, I sometimes show up in them, for I am an actor. And currently, right now, I'm on a Netflix, that's how you spell it, N-E-N-E-T-flix, no, just Netflix, a Netflix original series called Grace and Frankie. Grace is played by Jane Fonda, Frankie is played by Lily Tomlin. I play the adopted son of Lily Tomlin and Sam Waterston, and Jane Fonda's husband is played by Martin Sheen. But are they the husbands of their wives? That's sort of the conceit of the show. Check it out. It's streaming on Netflix right now, Grace and Frankie.
Welcome back, one and all. Who are you?
I'm Leonard Maltin.
No, you're not.
Sometimes.
Well, you pretend to be, yes.
We look a lot alike. I did draw on a beard. I know you can't see that, but just I drew on a beard to
distract
him. That's
my daughter, Jessie Malton. I'm Leonard Malton. Welcome back. And we're talking about heroes for every generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the heroes are still there in various guises, but the faces change.
Mm-hmm.
As times change. And you can't put your head in the sand. You cannot be an ostrich about this. Times change, and if you don't adapt, you're going to be very, very unhappy.
That might be my new favorite pull quote for you. That's excellent.
Yes.
So since so many of you were kind enough to respond when I asked who you thought was best, you know, we really went through, there was so many answers for so many things. But one that came up a lot was Kevin Conroy. Because for a lot of people, it's the cartoon series.
For Batman.
For that, yeah. Kevin Conroy is Batman. But a lot of people brought up the cartoon series as mm-hmm. being that being the thing that's all they can think of when you mention certain people. And I thought that was so interesting. It was so interesting to look at that. You know, because you have obvious things like Linda Carter is Wonder Woman. They may try to bring another Wonder Woman. Well, they are, but, you know, it's Linda Carter. She is Wonder Woman in the same way that Lou Ferrigno will always be the Hulk, even mm-hmm. with new people. Mm-hmm. To some degree, that's always going to be him. But I thought it was just so interesting, so many people talking about these cartoon series and having those be, because, again, childhood,
yep.
It's childhood, and it was in the 90s, and so mm-hmm. that's when...
Yeah.
You know, if you're a certain age, I'm 29, and that's what they saw.
Yeah.
So for them, regardless of anything else, that's always going to be what it is.
Just last night in my class at USC, I showed my students the first of the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons from the 1940s, which were very sophisticated for their time. They actually brought the look of and the feel of the comic books to life
mm-hmm.
through animation. And very ambitious animation for the Fleischers. But for the voice of Superman, they turned to the actor who was playing him on the radio at the time.
Mm.
It was a very, very everything about Superman was popular. He was created in 1938, as most of you know, in Action Comics. And then he became a multimedia star. And one of those media was the movies, and they did an animated cartoon series, short subjects. Well, for the radio show, an actor named Clayton Collier played Clark Kent and Superman. He later became a very popular television game show host using the name Bud Collier, his nickname. And some of you oldsters may remember Bud Collier from To Tell the Truth or Beat the Clock. And I was just in a hotel that had a cable network showing To Tell the Truth and other Goodson Todman game show reruns.
We couldn't look away.
No, I couldn't turn away.
We couldn't stop watching.
But the thing about Bud Collier is that he would say on the radio show, as Clark Kent, "This looks like a job for Superman." He would lower his voice because he had two different voices. And they did that in the cartoon. They got a kind of a laugh last night when the students saw it. But it's fun. Call it cheesy if you like, but it's fun and it works. Some years ago, I got to meet Stuart Irwin Jr., son of a very prolific actor and comedian who was popular in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And I happened to know that his uncle was Bud Collier. And I said, did you spend much time with your uncle? He said, well, we grew up in Los Angeles and he was living in New York, so I didn't see him as often as I'd like. But I would ask him to do the voice thing, and he did it for me in person when I was a kid, and it meant a lot.
Yeah.
This looks like a job for Superman. Can you imagine?
I think you've got it.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it. I think we know what the next step in your career should be.
There's even a piece of video that still exists where my old friend Frank Buxton, who wrote one of the first great books about old-time radio, did a segment with Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show where they got Bud Collier to recreate a segment of the Superman show on the air, which is great fun to see. Great, great fun to see. So, you know, so many people have played him, and I guess there'll be many others to come. Just as Batman, you know, is going to be one of those enduring characters. Yeah. We could go through this. We could go through Zorro, the Lone Ranger. You know, there are many, many
characters. There's only one Lone Ranger, and there's only one Tonto.
Yes.
And if anybody tries... This falls into the same category as Mary Poppins. Anybody tries to tell me that I'm incorrect in this statement, I'm going to fight you. I will meet you on the street. We can go. Because again, talk about a voice.
Oh, well.
I mean, and that we've gotten to hear live, which has been so neat.
Oh, well.
And the first time I heard it, I was seven years old.
We got to meet and know a little bit Fred Foy, a wonderful, wonderful man who was a very busy radio and then television announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And in the later days of the Lone Ranger radio show, by the mid to late 40s, and it came out of Detroit, station WXYZ in Detroit, Fred Foy was the announcer. He's the one who said, return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
See, I'm telling you, this could be your next gig.
Well, it's my dream, my lifelong dream was to be a radio announcer like that.
I'll tell you what, you can wake me up every morning in that voice.
Well, Fred Foy, who delighted in doing this, at the Lone Pine Film Festival on Lone Ranger weekend. They turned on a tape recorder and played the William Tell Overture.
And at the appropriate moment,
Fred Foy came in and did the whole opening narration of the Lone Ranger. It was thrilling. Let's not mince words. It was thrilling.
I think I was young.
Yeah.
And I about lost my mind. I was so excited. It was such a neat thing to get to do.
And the guy who played the Lone Ranger on the radio for the longest part of its history, Brace Beamer, he had a great voice, as did Clayton Moore, who played him on television. A great voice was part of the equipment of being the Lone Ranger. No mm-hmm. question of that. We won't distinguish by mentioning it, that recent alleged motion picture. We just won't go there, okay?
Yeah. I don't even know what you're talking about.
We choose not to go there.
Now, the last thing I do want to mention mm-hmm. Is my dad, and he's mentioned this because he teaches at USC. I wouldn't say force, but it's a little bit of force. He gets to force film history upon the kids.
Because it's not a film history class.
It's not. It's
a film appreciation class where we show new movies and have the filmmakers there.
Yeah, the students learn sort of how to watch a movie with a critical eye, but not in the negative sense, but just to sort of learn how to take in the costume design, cinematography, etc. But he started a very long time ago showing them some form of short before the feature. And depending on what it was, he's done Zorro's Fighting Legion. He's done lots of different ones. Sometimes it's Max Fleischer and Betty Boop, whatever it may be. Well, at home, what I grew up watching, there were two. One was Captain Marvel.
The Adventures of Captain Marvel by Republic Pictures. One of possibly my favorite Saturday matinee serial.
And it still, by the way, confused me for a long time. I didn't know what happened because I didn't realize that he's Shazam, mm-hmm. and that's a whole legal issue. But mm-hmm. But I grew up on those, and I loved them, and that's what I watched every night before I went to sleep. Because most nights my parents were obviously at the movies, so that's what I would watch, and loved it, and I still love it. I think of it, and I still love it. There was that, but then, as I mentioned, Buster Crabbe. Watching Flash Gordon and his golden curly locks and the joy it brought me.
And I showed that to my class and they got into it.
Yep.
My 20-somethings really got into Flash Gordon. And at one point, one of my students, who was an athlete, came to me during the break and said, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned that Buster Crabbe was the first USC All-American to go to the Olympic Games. I said, shame on me for not knowing. I knew he was an Olympic athlete, mm-hmm. Olympic champion, mm-hmm. swimmer. But I didn't know that he was a USC alumni and alumnus. And so I learned that, and I passed that along from that then on to my students, to my class. I learned, too.
Yep.
It's always
time
to learn.
I cannot recommend serials enough. If you're trying to get something that some people, it's been really lovely. Some people have said that they like hearing my dad and I talk about movies because they hope that they can do the same with their kids. And what I recommend more than anything else is starting small.
Oh, yeah. The younger.
Start. No. I don't mean physically small. I mean, start with something short.
Start small. I'm talking about you as victim.
No. Start small.
You as unwilling victim.
Start small when they can't run.
Yeah, no.
There's that, too. And thank you for reminding me. I blocked that out.
You're saying starting with shorts and serial chapters.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Because it's easier, instead of having a kid sit down. I mean, honestly, it's true of Westerns, true of many things. When you're trying to show a kid something new that they don't know, you want to start with something enjoyable and simple and easy.
Short and sweet.
And that's what these are. And you can get them into it. You really can. And then it becomes a lot of fun. And so for me now, I have my VHS of George Reeves and proudly love it. And, you know, It holds such a place in my heart, all of these serials that I grew up with. And so I always tell people, watch them. They're fun. They're shorts. If you don't, the worst case scenario, you don't like them and you haven't wasted that much of your time.
Just so we've said it, they're politically incorrect.
Oh, yeah, well.
In many ways, in many cases.
Yeah, well.
Which is why I show Zorro's Fighting Legion, because it's relatively safe.
It's pretty.
And it's already a period piece because it's set in old California, so that helps. No one is distracted by the wide lapels on the suits.
No.
Yeah.
I will say, in the Disney TV series, one of my favorite moments in the Zorro TV show that Disney did is when they had Annette Funicello on as a young Spanish girl, and the line that she says that I like to repeat at home a lot is, "Gracias, Señor Zorro, gracias." Now, if that's not a lovely Spanish accent, I don't know what is.
Thanks for sharing that.
Anytime. I'm here for you.
Well, that's our show for today.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
A little meandering, I admit, but I think we covered interesting turf because this is what movies are about. Movies reflect their time, whether they mean to or not, they do. And so what you said before about casting, what Baron actually said about casting for the time period, is so true.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't cast the same person in 1950 that you would in 1960, 70, 80, 90, and into the 21st century. So we all grow up. We all fall in love with our heroes at the time that we're supposed to fall in love with our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
When we're impressionable.
When we're impressionable. Or as you said, when you're too small to run.
That's all true. Thanks for joining us today. Always a pleasure to be here talking movies. And I love doing it with my daughter, Jessie.
And remember to have your pets spayed and neutered.
We'll be back next week, possibly with a surprise guest. It could happen. And I want to remind you that I'm always available on Twitter at Leonard Maltin. I'm writing regularly on my website, leonardmaltin.com. And right now I'm plugging the fact that my brand new third edition of Leonard Maltin's Classic Movie Guide is out, available in stores and online. And it is branded by the good people at TCM, Turner Classic Movies. So it's TCM Presents Leonard Maltin's Classic Movie Guide. If you or friends or parents or grandparents are addicted to old movies and watch Turner Classic Movies, this book is the perfect companion guide. That's not a boast. That's a definition.
Ooh.
It's intended for those folks, for those people, old movie buffs.
And there's 300 new films added
new
to
entries,
the book.
Yep, 300 new old movies.
300 new old movies.
That we've never
included
before.
And updated and revised other reviews.
Yep. Much improved. Much changed, much improved.
Buy my book.
Thanks for being here, folks. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Have you ever been a victim of online bullying? Can you imagine what it's like to get endless anonymous hate messages from all across the globe?
Lizzie Velasquez was born with a congenital disease that makes it impossible for her to gain weight. And ever since a video of her circulated on YouTube with the caption, "The ugliest woman in the world," she's been a spokesperson against online bullying. This week, she releases her wonderful documentary, A Brave Heart, about her experiences.
I'm Deanna Raphael at Deanna Raphael.
And I'm Emily Foster at Frida Foster. And we were lucky enough to talk to Lizzie on the most recent episode of our podcast, OMFG. Listen to a bit of what she has to say here.
Every time I see a bad comment or someone says something, it doesn't really, I mean, there are times it will upset me. I mean, I'm human. But at the same time, there are times where I see it and I think, I really do still have a job to do. There are still people that are needing help or needing to see that there is a different outlet for your anger.
Listen to the rest of that interview on the latest episode of OMFG, featuring Lizzie Velasquez.
Then keep listening to OMFG on Wolf Pop to get down with the latest hip trends and far-out slang the kids are using these days. Did I say far out? I meant fire.
Totally fire. Check out OMFG on iTunes, Howl, or your favorite podcasting app.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Pop. Pop.
Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.